You are now listening to the Sports Life Talk podcast, hosted by Kevin Tumnus and Serge Vasudevic, where life without sports is just talk, on blogtalkradio.com.
This is episode 5 of Sports Life Talk. I'm KT with my man Serge. Serge, how's it going?
I'm good, man. Trying to get better every day. Finding out this cold, flu, bronchitis, all the above, man. Just trying to hang in there, medicating, resting. But it's been a whirlwind of about 8-9 days of this thing, man. It's dragging me down.
Yeah, we missed last week because both of us were under the weather. But my man Serge, he took a flu shot, but did it help you at all?
No, man. I mean, I've gone, 32 years without ever getting a flu shot and, never had the flu ever in my life before either. But last year, my doctor just, I went for my physical and just kept insisting me that I take it and it's free. Come on, you got to get it now before you get the flu. And I was like, okay, why not? And then, 2 months go by, I got a little episode, and now 5 months later, I got another episode, and that's just never making that mistake
again. Yeah, so you're saying it wasn't worth it, right?
Not at all. Don't do it, people. Don't
because
do
sometimes
it.
Free isn't always good.
Nope, it isn't.
All right, we're going to move right on, and we're going to talk about just athletes in general. So, Serge, my question to you would be, do you want winners, as far as athletes, who play the game the right way, or do you prefer talent over their actions?
I'm actually going to always pick players who play the game the right way. I know at the end of the day, a lot of people are going to be looking at wins and losses and at the bottom line and things like that. But for me, to be able to have any player from, the guy that's the best one on the team to the guy that's least talented on the team, but as long as they play the right way, because when they're on the field and other people are watching, you want to be able to take that and apply that for the next generation. And I think showing examples playing the game the right way, to me personally, is way more important than just the talent aspect of it. And for me, obviously, you have to have some kind of talent to be even on the field. So I just think at that point, it's if you're on TV and people are, millions of people are watching, I think making sure to play the game the right way can go a long, long way.
For me, yeah, I would love for my any players that I coach to be role models. But let's be honest, are they in it to be role models, or are they in it for themselves and their families?
Always going to be for themselves and families.
Exactly. So they got to live their life the way that they want. And in a perfect world, yes, I want them to be just angels. But come on. In order to win games, you need your mixture of angels and your devils. You need your knuckleheads. And I see that every day. And as a coach, sometimes you're a little closer to the knuckleheads because you want to keep on the straight and narrow and y'all forming that relationship. Yeah. And if you're able to get through to them, hey, they will literally run through walls, jump out buildings, everything for you.
Right.
So for me, I want that mix. In a perfect world, yes, give me guys that are not going to get in trouble, that I can go home, go to sleep, don't have to worry about 2 a.m. Hey, man, he was out at the club doing this and that, and it wasn't anything good. Anything yeah. after 12 o'clock isn't good anyway. So that's what they say anyway. I know I've had some fun after 12 o'clock. I don't know about you, Serge.
I have too.
All right, so let's move right along to our next one. Bill Belichick was told that he needed to trade Jimmy Garoppolo, and that was against his wishes. If it came down to it, who would you pick? Are you Team Brady or Team Hoodie?
I'm Team Hoodie, man. I think Bill Belichick is, to me, he's the greatest NFL head coach of all time, and I think he's able to take lesser players or players that get cut from other teams and able to just pick them up right off the street and put them in the team, and he's able to get the most out of athletes and players from their respective position. I think the way that he's coached defenses and the motto of just do your job has obviously, garnered him to be able to, be in 7 Super Bowls and win 5 of them. And I think just also looking at the times when, Tom Brady wasn't playing, he got that year, I think it was 2009 when Matt Castle was a quarterback. They won 11-5, obviously made it to the playoffs.
So let me ask you this, Serge. So you think players make coaches or coaches make players?
I think it can go both ways. It depends on the situation. I think with this situation, because obviously Bill Belichick, when he you know, was, you know, beginning with the Patriots, you know, he had Drew Bledsoe as a quarterback, but then, you know, obviously he went down with the injury. Tom Brady steps right in, and then, you know, the rest is kind of history at that point. But and I think, you know, they have a great working relationship that allowed them to be together, work together to, you know, to be the best at, you know, each one of their positions. And Tom Brady was obviously not like a first round, second round pick or anything like that. So nobody saw, you know, this coming. But I think Bill Belichick has a lot to do with, you know, making sure that, hey, look, you know, we can do a lot of great things if you just put in a lot of, you know, work and effort, you know, during the off season and working on your diet and, you know, working with your receivers and things like that during the off season, learning the playbooks and regardless of who the offensive coordinator was. And I think Brady's been able to take that, you know, under his belt and just do everything that Bill Belichick has asked him to do as well. So I think Bill Belichick, the coach, is always a great mind like him is going to be really important for the success of their team. Like, I don't think if he put another coach in place of Bill Belichick that they would have the same success, even if Tom Brady is the quarterback of the team.
Now, I think Bill Belichick is the greatest coach in NFL history. With that said, I don't like the way that he and Coach Pop deal with the media. Mm-hmm. Even though I know that's kind of off topic, that's one of the things that I just don't like. So I just get that out.
Yeah.
But in this instance, I'm going to go Team Brady. And the reason I say Team Brady is I don't think he could have won a Super Bowl with Bledsoe. I really don't think that. And he, now that he's able to get his players in, you know, in his system, I'm thinking it's more of the players that are making him. Now, with that said, he is able to go get a guy from another team and put him in the system, and it works. But that doesn't work every time. I can give you examples of, like, Chad Johnson. That didn't work. I don't understand why it didn't. He had the perfect opportunity. So I'm just going to go Team Brady, because I think if Belichick were to leave, if he were to go to the Giants, so say, that Brady will still be able to right that ship because he's the greatest quarterback ever. So I'm going Team Brady. Speaking of the Patriots, did they make a mistake in trading Jimmy Garoppolo?
I don't think so. I think given the circumstances that they were put in, because, I mean, they almost pretty much didn't have a choice, because obviously he was about to become somebody that they would have to franchise tag. And, you know, otherwise, you know, if they didn't trade him, then, you know, there was no way that they were going to be a franchise and pay him $20 million in addition to the money you're already paying Tom Brady. Like, there's just no way with the salary cap that they, you know, that they had to work with that they could do that. So it was best. And if Tom Brady was showing some signs of falling off, or, you know, maybe we kind of see the, you know, light at the end of the tunnel, then, yeah, maybe they shouldn't have made the trade. But, I mean, he's might probably end up even winning the MVP. I don't think he should, but I think there's a good chance he might win. He's at least going to be in top two or top three in the voting. So means he's played that well. So, and I don't see, you know, he's in the playoffs. You know, they won yesterday. You know, who knows? They might even win the Super Bowl this year. So you can't really argue, you know, the mistake of trading Jimmy Garoppolo. But yeah, I mean, I think on Garoppolo's end, you know, he's going to be a great, great quarterback as well. And he was able to learn under being with Tom Brady and, you know, being able to play, as we said, like earlier, playing the right way. You know, went to San Francisco, won all five games he started. So, you know, looking forward to seeing how well he does. And maybe he might be a sleeper fantasy pick next year.
I don't think he's going to be a sleeper. I think he's a definite maybe fourth round. I'm not taking him really high. Now, you said that for my first five games that we saw Garoppolo with the 49ers, they won. So you mean to tell me that you have a 40-year-old quarterback in Tom Brady, who we'd say is the greatest of all time, but he's 40. You have Garoppolo, who's just been sitting in the wings. So Belichick knew, hey, we have a gem here. Why would we trade him? Let's just keep him here. Brady might fall off next year. So I think it was a mistake, especially what I saw from the 49ers. The 49ers have been trash all year. He comes in and they win five games straight. So the proof is in the pudding. We have video that how good that guy is going to be with that franchise who got rid of Colin Kaepernick and Alex Smith And now they have their next franchise quarterback.
So you would have done it even though you would have had to probably franchise him and pay him $20 million next season?
How about if next season Tom Brady goes down and now we got Brian Hoyer? Would it have been worth that money then?
Yes, but that's a very hypothetical. What if Brady plays lights out and they go 13-3 and he doesn't ever even see the field?
See, that's another hypothetical too, though.
Right. So,
but my thing is, look, sir, just not my money.
It's a business, right?
It's a business,
and you have to admit, because it's like, you know, yeah, they have Edelman, they have Gronk, but if they also want to, let's just say they end up giving up, you know, 35, 40 points to somebody in the AFC, you know, maybe they when they play the Steelers or somebody, you know, something, or when they go to the Super Bowl. Well, oh, we need to improve our defense. Well, now we need to have money to go after some defensive players that we feel like need to fit the team. But if we would have franchised Garoppolo, we wouldn't have that extra money to go after those players. So it's a trickle-down effect of why one decision has to be made or didn't get made that affects the team in other areas too. So, I mean, there's a lot of hypotheticals that go into
it. I get what you're saying too, but look how valuable QBs are in the NFL.
Oh, I know.
And they had two. So now you just traded him away. You got Brian Hoyer as a backup, who I'm pretty sure they won't go into next season with him as a backup.
No.
So that's what I'm saying. I would have kept him. It's not my money. Robert Kraft, he's not hurting for money, but I get what you're saying, how that strangles them where they can't go and make other moves, but they can go out there and get a dude and just put him in the system. He'll be good. So,
well, honestly, Robert Kraft is the one who basically forced him to make the trade because he knew that I don't see Tom Brady falling off, and I don't want to pay Jimmy Garoppolo that money. So
do you think that he has too much faith in Tom Brady, Kraft?
No.
I understand that he's eating his vegan ice cream and everything, but, hey, he's one good hit away at 40.
He is, but it's like, you know, on one of those things where you're innocent until proven guilty, where I think you're, you know, he hasn't shown anything to me, or I would like to think most of the league, that he's, you know, far from being done playing. But then again, he could win the Super Bowl again and just sit there at, you know, at home a week later and be like, man, you know what? I think I'm done. Let me just go out on top. And if that happens, yeah,
then you're screwed.
You know, but, you know, I guess clearly Robert Kraft feels like, hey, if he says he's going to play, wants to play till 45, I believe in Mr. Tom Brady.
Well, he's a fool if he thinks he's going to play to 45. Because Brett Favre played to what, he was 43?
I think 42, 43.
Well, yeah, and then you see what happened to him. Life comes at you fast.
It sure does. It sure does.
All right, speaking of, we just talked about the great quarterback, right, and Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about one that, he's just. How much faith do you have? Well, how much faith should Eagle fans have in Nick Foles?
I mean, the way that he played down the stretch of the season after Carson Wentz got hurt, I personally wouldn't have a lot of faith. I mean, even just watching the game last night, you know, they did beat the Falcons, but I don't think it was because of great play by Nick Foles. And I think everybody kind of wishes that he can play the way he did back in 2013, but, you know, we're four, not going into a 5 years later now, and I just don't see how that's even possible. So, you know, they need to get down on their knees, go to church, and pray that Nick Foles, you know, is basically Carson Wentz in a different jersey or something.
Well,
I don't see them being able to keep going any further, regardless of who they end up having to play, whether it's the Vikings or the Saints after today's game. I don't see them being able to beat that team.
Yeah, they're done after next week. I have about as much faith in Nick Foles as if I were to jump out this second-story window right here and not break anything. I'm going to break something, and Nick Foles is going to break the hearts of the Eagles fans. They, you know, they have a really good defense. And Eagles fans, you can try to say, yeah, we got faith in them. No, you don't. Now, after you've seen for the past 2 weeks, the Cowboys game, that was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, he did a decent job, but like you said, that's the defense.
Yeah.
Defense wins championships, and Nick Foles won't win the championship for you. So we're going to stay on the topic of the quarterbacks, and we're going to talk about the quarterback coming who declared for the draft, and Lamar Jackson from Louisville. Do you see him having a successful career in the NFL?
I do. I think I see a lot of similarities with him and like a Teddy Bridgewater. I see him, you know, with obviously being able to be a dual threat. Now, he's not the size of maybe somebody like Cam or but, you know, he can't. He's very good at throwing the ball. He makes very good, smart decisions in the pocket. So I think as long as you give him a good old line, you know, a decently and to above average running game, I think he's, you know, and then it's all about the system that he, you know, will get put into and who drafts him. But I think he has the makings of being even somebody that probably will even be better than like a RG3 and be more of like a Teddy Bridgewater type who you don't really know, but his football instincts, I think, speak very high volumes for him and the way he's able to play. And I think he can transition that into the NFL.
I think what he has, man, is just something that you can't coach. It's there. He's a heck of an athlete. He has a decent arm. And I hope that somebody gives him a chance and they don't treat him like another dual threat quarterback that came from college and they move him to like receiver or something. Yeah. Put him in the slot. No, give him a chance. He's a winner. And, you know, the Heisman hasn't been kind to kids. Well, people come to the draft that are like dual threats like that. So I'm hoping he gets a chance. Maybe Cleveland. You may not want to use a first-round pick on him, but he'll be there later on.
Yeah.
Why not get him and give him a chance? Because I think he would be successful. All right, let's move on to a little coach talk in the NFL. And the Lions, the Detroit Lions are set. Well, they have hired Matt Patricia, the defense coordinator from the Patriots. Do you think that was a good move?
I think it was. I think if you look at the way that the Patriots have been, you know, playing defense, and I think obviously at the end of the day, I don't think people just look, you know, the Lions organization isn't just looking at the fact that he's a defensive coordinator, but he's also coming from the tutelage of Bill Belichick, and that goes a long way. And so he's going to come in with a lot of experience, you know, playing in high volatile games, you know, being in the playoffs, you know, putting players in the right positions. And the Lions, you know, offense is definitely not somewhere where they really ever lack with, obviously, you know, Matt Stafford, you know, leading the charge. And I think defense has been their Achilles heel. So I think Matt Patricia is a really good hire, you know, and on the other hand, you know, this kind of opens the door, hopefully, that the coordinator on the other side will hopefully be somebody that my team, the Colts, will go after.
Well, yeah, your coach needs somebody, man.
Yeah.
But I don't think, was it Pagano?
What
was
yeah,
I don't think.
He's gone.
Yeah, he wasn't the issue, though. I mean,
no
Andrew Luck. I think it was a good hire, if only because of the whole Belichick, you know, tree. But how many of his coaches have went somewhere else and really been successful? That's what I'm thinking.
Not too many.
Because it's easy to be under him and just work with something. Now you're over a whole team. I mean, I hope that he taught him something or he learned something from him. But yeah, the Lions, they do need defense. I think one of the worst mistakes they made was getting rid of Sue. Mm-hmm. I think they should have kept him. He was the most dominant defensive lineman we had in the game. Was he dirty? Yes. But was he productive? Yes. So that could have went along with what we talked about earlier. But I thought about that earlier. But, yeah, I think it's a good hire, and hopefully it will help out Detroit because their offense is good. You put a defense with them. Look how the Saints are doing this year.
Yeah.
They finally got Drew Brees a defense, and they're probably going to go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
All right, speaking of coaches who I think he should come back to the NFL, but he gets a bad rap, Jim Harbaugh. He has they say that he wears down his players. Do you think that is a fact, or are we just babying our players?
I think there's a lot of babying our kids, man. I think, you know, I think he's just all about hard work. You know, he's taking guys and recruiting guys, obviously, to his program to obviously make the program successful. But, you know, he's just been a guy who also is trying to, you know, train guys to be grown men and adults into whatever profession outside of football that they decide to step into. And obviously, not everybody's going to make it to the pros. No, I don't think he's necessarily wearing down any players. I mean, you're talking about guys who are 17, 18, 19, 20 years old, you know, got young legs. And, you know, if you want to be able to, you know, most of those guys aren't trying to go to college to play, continually play football if they don't really think that they want to put all the effort into trying to see if they can make it to the pros, because that's what everybody strives for when they start playing at a young age. So I don't think so. I think it's just like in the day and age we live in, it's like, you know, sometimes hard work gets taken away and it's not, at, you know, shown as important. And I think he's somebody that's trying to change the mold and, you know, just showing that, you know, working people out more and just training them, you know, to get them better at their skills and, you know, further expand their talents. I think that's, you know, that's just the way that he does coaching. And I agree with you. I think he should be back in the NFL coaching, too.
Yeah, because I'm tired of these athletes being babied. Everywhere that Jim Harbaugh has went, that school or team has gotten better. I bet you the 49ers would love to have him back. Mm-hmm. Could you imagine him with Garoppolo now, they could go?
Yeah.
So, yeah, the times we live in now, we just want everything to be easy.
Easy, yeah.
And if it was easy, then everybody should make it to the NFL. I should go out and play for receiver right now. Yeah. And I should be able to make it if it's that easy.
Yeah.
If we don't want to be coached.
Yeah.
You have to want to be coached as an athlete. And I think that's a lost art. We just want everybody to go in. Everybody's not going to be successful. That's this thing called life.
Right.
Life, it comes at you fast.
Yeah.
Some people just don't know how to handle it. And if you can't handle it, then he's not the coach for you. Get players that, you know, going to fit that system. They're going to want to work hard, just like Tibbs. He was in Chicago. Oh, yeah. He's wearing them down. But they were going to the playoffs consistently.
Right.
It's just the
you can't have it all.
Yeah, you can't. Speaking of having it all, though, the Oakland Raiders got their man John Gruden. So with that said, Serge, they automatically said, hey, that's our guy. And they did interview a couple of guys that were African-American. But has the NFL just totally forgotten about the Rooney Rule?
I don't know the NFL as a whole forgotten about the Rooney Rule, but in this case, I definitely think the Raiders forgot about the Rooney Rule. I think they were just so adamant. I don't think it was like during the latter part of the season, like, oh, we're going to try to get John Gruden to come in. No, I think this has been a plan, you know, going probably into the beginning of the year, trying to see, like, you know, let's see where this team goes, because they were on a hot streak, you know, coming down last year. When I picked up Marshawn Lynch, like, there was all this hoopla around them. There was all this energy. I know Derek Carr, you know, got hurt early, but it's only out, I think, one game. And they had pretty much all the same players, but for some reason, like, the team wasn't gelling like they were the previous year, and they kind of lost their edge. And I think they knew, you know, probably around the middle of the season, like, you know what, this season's probably going to be a wash, and we're going to start preliminary conversations with John Gruden, because that's what we really want. Let's go ahead and put that out there, because maybe, you know, we'll be able to better, you know, get free agents, because they would want to come play for John Gruden when it comes to developing players that are coming out of college. And, you know, maybe he can also really work with Derek Carr to improve his game as well. So I think they definitely just bypass any other options and just went straight to John Gruden. And they knew if they really wanted to get him out, to come out of the, you know, to come out of the booth of ESPN to do and Monday Night Football, that they were going to have to offer him a lot of money, more than anybody that's ever gotten. So
do you think he deserves that money?
Personally, no, I don't think so. I don't think he's proven enough to me, and being away from the game for that many years. And I think the game has changed so much since he was last coaching. I just don't think you can just end up, you know, I think it was more of a, you know, the length of the contract could have been okay, but I think the money could have been staggered to where, you know, he gets a lot less at the beginning, and then after 3 years they can renegotiate, and then if he's met certain requirements and he's proven, then you can backload his contract. But if not, then they should be able to renegotiate the contracts to where it's more along the lines of what other guys are making in the league. That's just the way that I would have done it. But that's just, you know, I'm not one of the Mark Davis, I guess that's the owner, or
yes,
Al Davis's son.
Well, see, I think that if they gave Del Rio another year, that they could have got to the Super Bowl. John Gruden is the Phil Jackson, pretty much, of the NFL. He can come in, and if you have talent, he can get to the Super Bowl. But I don't see him building his own team. When he won the Super Bowl in Tampa Bay, Tony Dungy, that was his team. He could have took him to the Super Bowl, because that showed you what your coach. He took them to the Super Bowl. So I think John Gruden saw this as an opportunity. That team is loaded.
Yeah.
I can go in and win now because he saw what they did the year before when they were healthy before Carr got hurt. So he's not worth that money. He's not worth $10 million a year. He hasn't proven. He hasn't coached in, what, 18 years? Or maybe exaggerating, 15?
I think it was.
At least 15, I think. Was it 03?
03 or 04, I think, yeah.
Either way, he hadn't showed you anything that he's going to come in there and be worth 10-year, $100 million. You mean tell me he's right up there with Belichick?
Yeah.
He's not.
Yeah.
So Oakland, I have friends that are Oakland fans, so I'm hoping that they turn that thing around because if not, that, well, that's just Oakland being Oakland, I guess.
Yeah, right.
Okay, let's move on and talk about he may be former receiver from the Cowboys, Bryce Butler, saying that if he had as much playing time as Dez, he could have been as productive. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think on one end, you know, in the times that he did get to play and he did get the ball thrown to him, he did make a lot of plays. And for whatever reason, this is probably always going to go back to a Jason Garrett question, why was he not getting more opportunities?
We know that it's money, and right. The money they were paying Dez.
And it's just like, on one end, it's like, okay, if he's making plays, you put him out there even just as a decoy. And then on the other hand, it's like, okay, all right, we threw the ball a couple times to Dez. He's not catching it because Bryce Butler hasn't earned the respect enough to where he's going to get double teamed. So, and he's got speed, he's got the size. So, you know, why not at least, especially the latter part of the season, like, why not make extra attempts to give him the ball? Let's see what we got to see. Either he could be somebody that we can mold into for sure number two, or if Dez isn't willing to take a pay cut, then maybe we can even move him to the number one slot. But, you know, right now it's kind of like up in the air. And that also goes for other teams who are looking to pick him up too, where you're not giving him the opportunity. Well, you know, it's very hard to – you know, so I agree with him that I think just by the productivity that he showed, he probably would have been, he probably would have done more damage if he had more opportunities. But obviously, we are talking about the Cowboys, and they just do things not
dumb stuff. They just do dumb stuff. I mean, look how many balls Dez dropped this year. Why not let Bryce Butler get in there? You can go four wide, put Bryce in the slot, put Cole Beasley in the slot, have Williams and Dez on the outside. Who can stop that?
Right.
Bryce Butler, like I said, he showed signs. He has good hands. He has the speed to stretch the field. It's coaching. And we'll talk about that every time with the Cowboys. It comes down to coaching and not utilizing all of your weapons.
Right.
So, yes, I think he was treated unfairly. I would have loved to see him on the field more. I think Cowboys fans in general would have loved to see that, especially seeing how you have your supposedly number one out there being pissed off. And then when you get on the ball, he fumbles. So why not give Bryce Butler?
I think this is like one of those cases. It's like perfectly set up. Next season, he goes to another team. Almost doesn't matter what team it is. And he just balls out. And then you're looking at it like, man, how come he wasn't doing this for us? He wasn't doing it for you because you weren't playing.
And he wasn't on the field. It's kind of hard to do anything when I'm on the sidelines just looking.
Right.
So speaking of being treated unfairly, let's talk about the wide receivers who are up for the Hall of Fame. Why is it so hard for a receiver to get in?
Man, I can't really even put my finger on it. I don't know. You know, I really don't want to even pull out the race card on this because I try to stay away from those type of things, but it's just more and more when these kind of things happen, and obviously most, if not all, the receivers, for the most part, I would say probably 95%, 98% of the receivers in the NFL that have played since, you know, at least the 60s and 70s are all African-American. And I think it's like, well, most of the quarterbacks are white. You got a lot of linemen that are white, and there's really no issues with them getting in, and I think – I know for me, the guy in question is Terrell Owens. Like, the fact that there has to be even a debate, and at the end of the day, he's going into the Hall of Fame for doing things on the field, regardless of which team he played for. It doesn't matter, and it's not like he was doing drugs, getting caught with drugs, and going to jail, or, you know, doing domestic violence. Like, he was never getting in trouble off the field for anything like that. It just, you know, there was some issues with the locker rooms and, you know, whatever. I mean, they're all, you know, different personalities. But the numbers that he put up, there should be no question that he should be a first ballot unanimous Hall of Famer. And he wasn't even one of my favorite receivers or anything like that. I just, I know what the man did on the field.
Yeah, the number speaks for itself with him. And I just think we just put too much value on the quarterback. Because how many times have we heard, yeah, the quarterback made that receiver? No. If I don't catch your balls, then guess what? You're nothing.
Right.
So how did you make me when I'm the one going across the middle, putting my body on the line to catch a pass from you that's sometime behind me, it may be low, it may be right in front of me, it may go a little bit out where I got to stretch, and now I'm at the defense's mercy. So I think that the quarterback position is really the reason why the wide receiver position is so hard to get in, because, like I said, they value the quarterbacks more. T.O., he should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. Randy Moss, he should be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yes.
They both should go in this time. They need to change that precedent. But, you know, they're going to pick one. So if you had to pick one of those to go in, who's going in first?
I'm probably have to go Randy Moss.
You have to go Randy Moss, only because he changed the game. How many times have you just been seeing somebody playing, oh, he got moused?
Yeah.
Oh, you got moused. T.O., he's just a freaky athlete.
Yeah.
But his hands aren't as good as Randy's. They both are not great route runners. They're just playmakers. So I would love for both of those guys to go in this year. And let's change that precedent, because it took Chris Carter way too long to get in. And I mean, Jerry Rice, there will never be another Jerry Rice, but there definitely won't be another Randy Moss.
Exactly.
So let me ask you this. If it came down to Randy Moss in his prime and Jerry Rice in his prime, which one of those two are you taking?
I'm going with Jerry Rice all the way.
I want to say Rice, but I want it where, hey, if my back against the wall, I can just throw it up, and I don't care how many guys are there, my guy's going to come away with it. So I'm going to go Randy Moss on that, because I know Jerry.
I can respect that.
I know Jerry's a great, great receiver, but I remember his first year, he dropped everything. Then all of a sudden, the second year, he came back and started catching everything. And a couple of years ago, he said, hey,
stick him.
I use stick him. So right there, that kind of takes away from my whole thing with you, man. So let's move away from the NFL. We did a lot of NFL talk this week, and we're going to talk about the NBA. All right, Serge, we've seen the refs, man. They've been kind of bad this year.
Yeah.
And now the players are coming out and speaking against it. So what do you think needs to be done to the refs who are just getting it just wrong this year?
I know one of the guys that retired who was in the, you know, Referees Association and who ref for a lot of years. I forgot the guy's name, but I know he's kind of like the oversight guy over all the refs now. And I think, you know, whether it's a training or just kind of recessions of certain rules and applying it to the game, because I think one of the things that we do have to take into consideration is the game has changed. The game is more a lot faster.
Yes, faster. Yeah.
Guys are faster. Guys are stronger. Guys are more skilled to be able to figure out ways what can work, what can't work, what I can get away with, what I can't. This is just my personal opinion, having also ref basketball and stuff like that before, but watching the game, I know it's all about angles and being in the right position and things like that. I think one of the things that might help eliminate a lot of these calls that go uncalled or calls that end up getting called that are ticky-tack, you know, they need to try to figure out ways where, you know, implementing not the full handshake rule, but maybe kind of a variation of it, bringing it back into the game. And I think one other thing that I've really put a lot of thought into that could really help is probably because of the pace that there is, I think it would be really good to have a fourth referee on the court. Because I've also seen, I think there's already been three or four games this year where a ref ended up getting hurt, and now there's only two guys on the court. And now, you know, if you have four, then, you know, you still end up having three. But I think having four, because of the guys are having to run up and down so often, and they're switching sides so often, and being able to have another set of eyes to communicate and seeing, different angles, and we're at least tested out.
So basically they have their own little zone, pretty much. That could be something that...
Right, yeah. And I think, you know, if they want to do a practice trial run in the G League and to see how it works, you know, before they implemented the league, which, you know, they do a lot with a lot of rule changes too, I think that would really, really help, you know, eliminate some of these guys. But, you know, I know Draymond Green's over here talking about get rid of all the refs now and then bring a new set in. Like, dude, like, that's just not...
That's not
then
smart.
We're going to get a horrible game to be able to
Did watch. You not see the replacement refs that came in the NFL? How did that work?
Yeah.
You know what I think what would help the refs? If everybody was officiated the same. If we didn't have somebody, okay, LeBron, we're going to give you all these calls. KD, Steph. No, let's just call the game straight up.
Yeah.
If it's a foul, it's a foul, whether you're a superstar or the sixth man coming off the bench. That would help a lot. That's the only sport that I can think of where certain players get more calls than the other, except the Patriots. With that whole organization, we know they get every call that they want or need. But let's just make the game simple. We've been making the game too hard. Oh, we don't know how to officiate Shaq or LeBron. If they're getting fouled, just like anybody else, call a foul. I think they'll go a long way. And I do like your idea of a fourth ref. Like I said, I would put them in zones. Hey, you stay here. You're there, you're there. That way it won't be that much running. And it's just, you just focus on certain things. Yeah. So I love that idea. So today, Serge and I, we're going to try our best to make the other, make the baseball, basketball, soccer as good as the NFL, or see how we can make it as popular. So Serge, what are some of the changes that you would make to make those sports more popular?
I think each one of those sports is obviously going to be viewed differently in how they can probably end up being more popular. I think soccer and baseball, I would say they need to really, really think about getting the star players of the leagues and promoting them on a higher scale. So whether it's commercials, doing ads on social media, putting their name out there consistently so that your average person can, whether they're a fan of that sport or not, just keep seeing face name, face name, face name so that they can get recognized. And then if they do get interested in that particular player, whether regardless of what the reason is, you know, then that sport could also, you know, self-elevate itself. I think the other thing is, I guess in the youth division side of it, obviously you have AAU for basketball that does help. And, you know, there's Pop Warner for football. But I think when it comes to baseball and soccer, even though there's a lot of leagues and stuff, it's just not as, you know, I guess forced out to the kids, and it's not promoted to parents to be able to like offer it to their kids and things like that. I think that's one of the other things. But I think as a whole, at the NBA, and obviously look at baseball, there's 162 games, and people, you know, lose interest because not, it seems like not every game matters. Even when it comes to, you know, basketball, like 82 games, not every game matters. So it's like maybe we could cut it down to like 60 to 65 games in basketball where, you know, now you're more intrigued in watching those games. I know NBA, obviously, because of the global brand, they're probably never going to really struggle for ratings or jersey sales and things like that. But I think baseball and soccer definitely, I mean, soccer is like a worldwide sport. So, but for some reason in America, soccer, it just isn't something that kids are, for whatever reason, growing up playing, even though we have a lot of states, like even where we are in Texas, where it's minority majority, you would think there's a lot more interest, you know, for kids to play soccer. And so it's just a matter of like some of the older guys who, you know, help shape soccer to the, you know, what it is. And some of these star players, you know, maybe doing some camps and things like that and going in various states and talking to kids and showing the importance. And kind of like we mentioned in episode one and episode two, what, like why sports is really important for kids, you know, giving them structure and showing them how it is to be disciplined and hard work and things like that. And I think a lot of these star athletes could do a lot to be able to come into the mold and not only help the sport grow and let it grow organically. And I think it could go a long ways.
I think they need to just go to areas where kids, you know, they don't have that chance of playing sports and invest money into, like you said, camps or trainings, because, I mean, it could be a way out. Because if we see a kid that's athletic and fast, one of the first things we do, we want to stick them in football or basketball. Now, I just think if you go, you keep going to those neighborhoods, not just the Black or Hispanic neighborhoods. I'm just saying any area that's not, they don't have the that foundation or a place where they can go play. I think if they were going there to invest money like that, get them when they're young, keep going back, and not just send anybody, send your top players, send your Dempseys in soccer, your Alex Morgans, even though I don't think the women have a problem. I think it's more of a male side, but still, just work together in soccer to get those guys to go in there, make a field in some of these places, mm-hmm. get buses, ship those kids to other places just so they can be exposed to it, because you never know. You can take some of those kids from basketball and football, and with football being as violent as it is, could you see some of the mothers and fathers out there, hey, I want you to go do this sport? So it's all about the finances and the resources that they can put towards that. Now, as far as baseball, it's the same thing. You have more of the people coming from, like, what?
South America.
South America coming here, and that's all they do is play baseball, and they see that as a way out. We'll offer that to everyone. Let's offer every kid a way out, not just the typical, oh, man, go play, go pick up a basketball, go get a football. Let's just open it up to everyone.
And I think with basketball and football, it is very easy to, like, go down the street, find a friend. You can throw the football around. You can go find a hoop. And I don't even need anybody else if I just want to go shoot around. But if I want to even just play one-on-one, I can go find a friend and, you know, just shoot around with and play a game. But I think, you know, maybe even some of these soccer fields and baseball fields, there's so many out there, and it's like, maybe the cities that have the rights to those fields, they need to maybe, you know, set up like organizations where, you know, people can just come play pickup. And that way, you know, the city provides the equipment. So you have to check in, like kind of like how you would at the gym if you want to go get a basketball, you know, check in, when you walk into the field. So there might be a game going on. Okay, if you want to play in the next game, you know, it's 30 minutes or whatever, and they put your name down so that regardless, you can just, you know, keep playing. And then, you know, it's a good workout. It can gauge more interest and things like that. And same thing for baseball, too. Like, you know, make them provide the bats and the balls and the gloves. And then, you know, they leave it, you know, once they're done playing, they just leave it and the city takes it and picks it up and goes. So I think there's different ways to probably do it where you can get a lot more out of it. And we can, you know, like I said, organically grow all the sports at the same time. And that way kids are more interested in playing different sports, because one sport can actually help you in other sports too. You know, footwork and soccer can go a long ways and help you in basketball, you know, just and vice versa. So,
and then the endurance you get from soccer too, that could help you out, because that's constant running, you know. All right, we're going to switch it up a little bit. We're going to talk about a little wrestling, a little WWE, Serge. Yeah. So how long have you been a wrestling fan?
I've been a wrestling fan since I was like, I don't know, 7-8 years old, man. I mean, when it was WWF, you know, during those days, I grew up.
The good times, man.
The very good times. I mean, growing up watching Bret Hart, you know, back in the days was my favorite wrestler. And, you know, there were so many, obviously Undertaker, Ultimate Warrior, Hulk Hogan, you know, the prime days of those guys. And then even when they, you know, switched into the Attitude Era, you had Stone Cold, Rock, Triple H, Shawn Michaels. You know, there were just so many guys that, you know, came through the fold. And then, you know, obviously there was a whole WCW thing that was going on. So it's like a competition.
ECW.
But it just made wrestling more interesting because they were all trying to outdo each other. So they're all trying to put out better product, better storylines for the wrestlers and stuff. And then obviously once Vince McMahon, the big boss man that he is, took over everybody, you know, now all these superstars all under one umbrella. And then they eventually also started their own camp to where they can, like, groom wrestlers who are interested and, you know, have the Hall of Famer wrestlers, like, work with them. And so that way when they do come into WWE, like, they're already ready.
Yeah, then they have, like, their own little G League, too, with the Next program, which is good. It's just as good as the Raw and SmackDown brand.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. And I think, you know, being able to groom them, because, you know, they work on everything. It's not just the in-ring presence, but it's also being able to be good on the mic and the way, you know, showing charisma and character and all those things too. So it's a very good program, man. And I think, you know, wrestling is another, just like, you know, it's another sport. It's another therefore entertaining. You know, and I think it's just, it's good for, you know, a good family outing, or, you know, being able to take your kids. And it's very cool because, you know, it's just a lot of, you know, there's no like horrible violence or anything like that. And I think, you know, if you're just wanting to be entertained, you know, wrestling can be very, very fun, regardless of, you know, how you, what your feelings about it is.
So you say your favorite was Bret Hart, right? Of all time? If it's all time, who's your all time favorite? I'll tell you right now. My all-time...
Yeah, I would say Bret Hart.
Mine would probably be The Rock, even though the one thing that my sperm donor slash dad gave me was wrestling. I remember watching those, sitting down watching those with him, and back in the day, he was just all Hulk Hogan, who now when I look back, I'm like, man, he wasn't that good.
Yeah.
He was just a... He just had the look. That's all it was. But I would go with The Rock. I love Triple H and Stone Cold. I love when those three are doing anything together. It's just... It's magic.
It is.
So, who is the most... underused wrestler today, whether it's men. Well, hold up. Who's your favorite female of all time? Female wrestler.
When it comes to strictly wrestling, I'm going to have to go with Lita. Lita was up there. I mean, doing her moonsaults, and, you know, she was able to do a lot of those extra stuff that I know most of the female wrestlers that are in the ring just do a lot of, you know, groundwork. But she was one of those more high flying, you know, kind of give the like luchador kind of feel to, you know, the way that she wrestled and stuff. So I would have to go with Lita.
I would go, can't go wrong with Lita. I love me some Lita, but I love some Trish Stratus.
Yeah.
She could wrestle and
that's Stratisfaction.
Oh, I was satisfied, man. So who is your like underused today, male or female? Well, male and female.
Male, I would definitely have to say Finn Balor. I think Finn Balor, you know, and he had that where he was the champ.
The first Universal champ.
But then obviously he had a bad, horrific injury and he had to be out, so he had to give up the belt. But he has the look. He has, you know, the wrestling skills are great. His finishing move is unique. You know, the fans loved him. I mean, the charisma, like... He looked like the total package, and he's young enough to where he's somebody that can carry the torch.
Well, I'm going to tell you now, he's not as young as you think he is. I know he's in his mid-30s.
Really?
Yeah, Finn Balor, I think he's a little older than you think he is.
Okay.
A lot of those guys are. But like you said, he has a look. They say, yeah, Jimmy Dean, is that his name? Or Jimmy, whoever he is. Yeah, he has a look, and technically he's the best wrestler in the business.
Yeah.
I don't think too many can touch him. So I'm going to agree with you with Finn Balor. So from the female side, where would you go?
Female side?
It's Bayley.
Okay.
She's great. As far as in-ring, it's not too many women besides Sasha Banks, Becky Lynch, with Charlotte Flair that can really touch her. They're like the four horse women.
Yeah.
They have been great. They have taken that division to another level. And she's just underused. The whole "I'm a hugger," cute. Yeah, do we want cute with our women? We want wrestlers.
Right.
Their looks speak for themselves.
Right.
Because Bayley, she's not bad looking. She has a nice body, but that's not what this is about.
Right.
I want to talk about her wrestling skills. She's a hell of a wrestler.
She is.
And she's underused. Now I really hope that they need to turn her heel or something, because she needs a new look.
Yeah, I agree with her. Agree with you on picking her as underused, because obviously Charlotte Flair, being Ric Flair,
she has Ric that pedigree.
Daughter, it's just kind of
I couldn't get real loud, but I did.
It just goes hand in hand to why she is. She gets what she gets. Sasha Banks, you know, just because of being a little different, you know the whole. Color aspect of it as well, you know, the race and things like that. She brings something else, but then, you know, her charisma is a little different. But I would say that she would be the perfect person that they maybe turn heel. Or, but yeah, the whole hugging thing and trying to be nice to everybody, that's cool and all, but at the end of the day, it comes down to wrestling, and they need to use the skill that she provides in the ring to, you know, expand her, you know, growth.
So they're going to have the first women's Royal Rumble. Who is your pick to win it?
But hopefully it's Bailey.
And that would be the perfect time to turn her heel.
Yeah.
And then have her win it. That would be awesome to have her to go against, who is Alexa Bliss.
Alexa Bliss.
She's a nice one. She's another one.
And she's been holding on to the championship.
But, you know, a lot of people don't like her.
Yeah, I know. Well, because, you know, and this goes back to the day and age we live in. People just don't like somebody just, like, always just being on top. Like, okay.
But I think with her, it was so quick. They're like, you know, you got Sasha Banks, who's a better wrestler, but Alexa Bliss just has it.
Yeah, she does.
She doesn't have to get loud on the mic. She can still be sarcastic. Her mic skills are underrated.
Right.
At first, I didn't like her as much, but as I see her, I'm like, man, she's good for the division. I'm glad that they're finally giving the women the spotlight that they deserve. And as long as they have good storylines and it can go, you know, to places that we haven't seen before.
Right.
And
there's been a couple of Raws where they've given them the main event spots and stuff like that. And I think that's great. And I think it's also for, you know, young girls that are also looking up to them. And, you know, it just gives them a good platform to, you know, hey, not necessarily going to wrestling, but, you know, like, if they could do something that they dreamed about doing, you know, I can do it too. So it's good.
Yeah. So one of the things we're all going to do, we're going to do more wrestling talk, and we're not done there yet. I want to ask you, who is your favorite faction or your favorite group of all time?
My favorite group of all time probably would have to be the NWO, but probably the Wolfpack.
Okay.
NWO, the red and black.
Yes.
As opposed to the white and black guys. I mean, with Sting and Kevin Nash, you know, just that whole existence just made just things, everything more spicy.
When Hulk Hogan turned heel, though, that was brilliant.
Ooh.
Why can't we get John Cena to do that? I know that he's the Make-A-Wish guy, that he's done the most. But, man, if he would turn heel with his mic skills, man, that would be great.
It would. I mean, it's like, because now people are 50-50 on him. You would just take that 50 that cheer for him and make it 100.
Yeah.
Because the people that are on the other side of him, they're just tired of the fact that he's the same.
Yeah, it's kind of boring. But yeah. He's still good. He's not the best wrestler. It's just him speaking on the mic is just, he's at the top.
He is.
It's between him and The Rock. I would still go Rock.
I would still go Rock, too.
But he's good at it. My favorite group of all time, I got two words for you. Suck it. There's never been a group that has been more entertaining as DX.
Yeah.
They actually went to a WCW event and was in front of it doing all this. But I think that was
military style.
Yeah, we all knew that was kind of staged, too, because look what happened later. They end up, you know, buying WCW. So I'm going to go DX. So let's move away from the wrestling and let's talk about our picks for today. We got the Jags at Steelers, the Saints at Vikings. Who do you have in the AFC?
I got the Steelers. I think they're going to avenge their loss that they had before with the Jags. I think Antonio Brown now being able to come back and just the mere fact that he's on the field changes the whole complexion of how now, you know, the Jags defense is, you know, super stout. I mean, they're, you know, probably if not the best defense in the league. But Steelers playing at home, I think they got something to prove. I think hopefully they don't overlook the Jags and, you know, already trying to mentally prepare for the Patriots, but they need to take the Jags seriously. But I still, no matter how much the Jags keep winning, I just cannot take Blake Bortles seriously. So until, you know, he proves me wrong, I'm going to have to go whoever they play against. And on the NFC side, I'm going to go with the Saints. I just think that they're just on this ride that from early in the season, especially once they got, you know, cut ties with Adrian Peterson, they've just been on this roll. And, you know, with the running game, not having to overuse Drew Brees during the season, he's got more energy and more life in him now. And I think he's got the experience of obviously going to the Super Bowl and winning MVP. You know, he's able to take those young guys and mold them, and you know, and I think it's going to be a tough game. It's going to be a, you know, slow paced out game with the Vikings defense, but the fact that it's indoors, I think, really also helps Drew Brees because he loves playing indoors. And I think, you know, for all of those reasons I stated, I'm going to go with the Saints.
I'm going to go Saints NFC just because they have a heck of an offense, a hell of an offense, and a good defense. Where you look at the Vikings, they have a great defense and a decent offense. So I'm going to go Saints there. Man, my heart tells me to go with the Steelers. I'm hungry right now, so my gut is telling me to go with the Jags. And since the first thing I'm going to do when we leave here, I'm going to get something to eat. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go Jags. The Jags are going to beat the Steelers today, and I'm going on my gut. So it may be wrong. All right, Serge, I want to talk about something that's been on my mind, man.
Okay.
People are planning on boycotting the Black Panther movie because one of their stars, Michael B. Jordan, is in an interracial relationship.
Heard about that.
Speaking from a guy that's in an interracial relationship, Serge, your wife is white. You're Indian.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you take the floor before I give my comments. What are your thoughts on that?
People just need to get over themselves, man. I think if you're going to start utilizing a platform of a movie and the character in the movie in his regular everyday life has nothing to do with the movie, you're going to utilize that to boycott watching the movie because he's in an interracial relationship. It just blows my mind that people are, you know, behave and think like that. And, you know, this whole racial relationship thing, it's gonna be the norm, and people just need to take that and live with it. I mean, and not only are we in a stage of being in interracial relationships, as time goes on, those interracial relationships and that produce those interrelationship kids, as they grow up to be older, and they probably will end up being with also another mixed person and have a kid, a child, you know. And so I think it only makes the world more beautiful. That's just the way I look at it. We need to really, really just start seeing things from the human element side of it as opposed to the color side element of it. Because at the end of the day, if two people are happy, regardless of what color they are, like, why does it matter? And what is it to you? How is Michael B. Jordan's interracial relationship messing with your life?
It's not messing with your life unless you're just jealous of his relationship.
Of course.
I mean,
you're pretty much saying that you don't really even like him because he's black and he's successful, and whatever your opinions about him when it comes to acting, that's your own opinion. You know, you can't hate on the hustle, and he's good at what he does, which is why he gets the role in the movies that he does. So, you know, it's just the people that are absolutely racist.
Yes.
And, you know, they just are not willing to look past anything, and they don't want to accept the fact that this is, you know, going to continuously grow and to become the norm in, you know, around the world, but especially more than anywhere else in the world, here in America. And that's just the reality of it. And if you don't face it, you know, you're going to have a lot of sorrow days in your life ahead of you till, you know, you no longer exist.
Like, my wife is black, but I have dated outside of my race. And I will say, I want to thank college for that. I remember sitting in the history class, and I just happened to look down, and I saw a lady. She was white. The first thing I noticed on her were her legs. You know, some of her legs, I was like, wow. And then I saw her, I was like, wow, she's beautiful. And me growing up in the neighborhood where it's predominantly black, that's all I dated. So when I got to college, I was able to step out of that box, and I started meeting people of different races, not only just dating, but just having friends.
Mm-hmm.
And those are some of the best relationships because y'all come from different parts. So when y'all get together, it's just, okay, well, that stereotype of, you know, black people being lazy or all white people being racist, you know, it's not true.
Right.
So like you said, it is a beautiful thing now that we have in the mixed marriages, the blending of families, because that's showing that we're just more accepting of other cultures, other races. And if you are one of the idiots who feel that, you know, I'm not going to watch it because he's dating a white woman, why? He's not dating a white woman in the movie. That's just his life outside. You have to stick with, it's just for entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
That man, he deserves to do whatever he wants, to date whoever he wants, because what do they say? Love is blind.
Right.
you can't help fall in love with who you fall in love with. If you see somebody that's attractive, go with it. Don't let other people, you know, stir you in a different direction. So really quick, we want to talk about a new segment that we're going to bring at called Life Comes at You Fast. And it's dedicated today for the Atlanta sports teams in big games. Last year, the Atlanta Falcons had a 28-3 lead on the Patriots. And what happened, Serge?
They blew the lead and let the Patriots come back and win.
And this year, they were the, even though the Eagles were best team record-wise, the Eagles were the underdog. Mm-hmm. And Atlanta Falcons went to Philly, and what happened?
Had the chance to win the game, blew it, and let the Eagles get away with what they probably should be waiting to see if they're going to play the Saints or the Vikings.
So we had the national championship game. The Georgia Bulldogs took on the Alabama Crimson Tide.
In Georgia.
In Georgia. Did they have the lead at some time in that game?
For a lot of the game, they had the lead.
And then they took the game out of their freshman's hands, the quarterback, Fromm, who was having a good game. They got all conservative. And what happened, Serge?
The game got closer and closer. Ended up getting tied. Went into overtime. And, Alabama scored and won the game.
So if this teaches you anything, Atlanta fans, you can't be conservative. You can't play timid. In big games, you have to step up. I think the Super Bowl is just a reminder to all of your fans that Matt Ryan probably isn't the answer. Yeah. He's never been the answer. I've never liked him, even though he was the MVP last year, right?
He was MVP.
And then he just went to bed. So, hey, sometimes life comes at you fast and you can't control it. So let's hope you have a better year next year. Once again, I want to thank everyone for tuning in to Sports Life Talk. I'm KT with my man Serge. We thank you for listening. We want to thank the Roberts Media Group and Blog Talk Radio for giving us a platform. We will see you next week. All my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle, pay the price. Want a slice, got to roll the dice, that's why. All my life, I've been grinding all my life. Look.